You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Brittany Cano. She shares with us the story of a pretty profound shift that she made during the pandemic. Lots of people have pandemic shifts and we all have pandemic stories. Brittany was working as an ICU nurse in New York at the time of lockdown. So I think that we can all imagine in our minds that this was an intense place to be. She experienced stress and burnout, and then it became clear to her that she needed to make some changes. Brittany's story goes on, though, because her personal journey to heal during that time, she realized that it wasn't actually just the stress from the pandemic, but that her burnout and stress had been building perhaps for decades. So Brittany and I discuss how she became aware of this and what she did to work through it. I know. The pandemic is long over, thankfully. But I think there's plenty in this conversation that really might resonate in a whole bunch of different situations that we might find all over the place. So, are you ready? Because I'm ready. Let's do it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Brittany Cano, are you ready for a fun chat?
I sure am.
All right, let's do it. I start all of my conversations with the same question. What part of the world do you call home?
I'm in Stuart, Florida.
And I'm just a couple hours, teeny tiny bit further south in the more southern part of Florida. We are having insanely warm weather. We are recording this right before Thanksgiving. It is so hot still where I live. Anyway, enough complaining about the weather. This is going to come out in January, but we're right before Thanksgiving. So I have leftovers already on the mind. And so my question for you is, do you like leftovers? And if so, is there a type of leftover that you like so much that you will eat it cold out of the fridge without warming it up?
I love stuffing. I am such a stuffing girl. But let me tell you, my in-laws are from South America where they don't celebrate Thanksgiving. So we do less of a feast because I was the one eating leftovers for almost a full week. And I do like leftovers, but not for a full week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is funny how people have their particular things with the American, any family holiday celebration. But so we've got a big family, like our Thanksgiving is very kind of eclectic and depending on who's coming. And every single time there'll be somebody who's like, well, why do we have this? And I'm like, because so-and-so likes it. They're the only people.
You don't have to like every single dish. It's okay.
Not exactly. Sometimes we'll have more than one style of things. It's like there's three different kinds of cranberry sauce because everybody has an opinion, you know?
So exactly.
That's the way it goes, kids. So that's the way it goes. All right. Topic of the day, not what's on the Thanksgiving table. We're going to talk about a shift that you underwent during pandemic lockdown. Now, I have had a tremendous opportunity to tell a lot of stories about shifts that people have made around, because, during the pandemic, but not one like this. I'm excited to have this conversation. You were an ICU nurse in New York during the pandemic. And that sounds to me like two things. One is you were actually trained to face some really tough hospital stuff, which the rest of us were going through like with no experience, right? My only medical training is watching Grey's Anatomy and raising children. And then also, like, I can't imagine there was anything other than awful, like 50 shades of awful. It's been some time since that, but you know, 5-6 years later, what are some of the things that still stand out from the first like 4 to 6 months of pandemic for you?
It really stands out, some of the people that I took care of. I can still see some of their faces, because what would happen is they'd come in with COVID, they'd be sick, and we would try to prolong putting them on life support or on a ventilator. So for 2-3 weeks, we would be with this patient who was extremely scared, couldn't have family visitors. And some of these patients were young. They were like in their 50s and 60s. They were still working. One lady was a security guard, or at a jail, not a security guard, but you know, she worked at the jail. And I remember just how lovely she was. And eventually she had to go on life support. So that was really horrific, because in the beginning, people typically didn't survive going on life support. Later on, people did, thank God, and there were exceptions. But that really stood out. And then also, we had a really amazing team. So that went a long way, even though it was really horrific in a lot of ways. I think we personally, I just did what I knew to do, and that was work. And I think that was a survival mechanism. So it wasn't even until months in, quite probably a year in, that I really started processing just how tragic it was. But the teamwork made such a big difference, because where I was at initially was Baltimore and then up in New York, and we
Okay.
had a lot of help. And so we just really relied heavily on each other. And we have a warped sense of humor in healthcare. So I think that helped us through as well.
Yeah, and so it's an interesting thing because you were already trained to work in intensive care, which are very complicated, high pressure medical situations, is my guess, versus someone who might be in a less high pressure. I can't, all medical things are probably high pressure, but like, so, a warm fuzzy, like, pediatrician, well checkup, that's a different set of skills. And so I think that you were in an interesting spot. It's also a situation, the ICU team, the emergency room team, it feels like that's the story that sort of has been memorialized in the media, like that we keep telling, like the hard part of those early, that first
Well, we would
year,
just
nine,
be
12 months.
hours in the room in these hazmat suits. And in the
Yeah.
beginning, too, we were thinking COVID lived on pizza boxes for 9 days. So there was a
Yes.
lot of unknown and, terror around that. Fortunately, my husband's also in healthcare, so we had each other. So I think that made a big difference. But it was wild. It was a really wild time.
One of the things, the two things that I mean, I had the opposite experience for you. I was home, my whole family, none of us are in medical, but I do remember the groceries. I remember the pressure to like wash the boxes and the
Yeah, and then
groceries.
now we're like, we didn't know.
But nobody knew. It was totally out. And the other thing I remember was that before we had the retail face coverings, there was a period where the rules were ambiguous and the enforcement was ambiguous, and you just kind of never knew. And there were all these bizarre stories. People tying t-shirts around their face to go into a CVS. Friend of mine, like he went from the gym and he needed to pick up a prescription and he ended up with like a pair of boxers that he had. It was, I mean, just ridiculous. People doing the best they could. But those are two of the strange thing, little stories
And it
that
was night and day being up in the Northeast versus coming back to Florida to
yes.
visit was so confusing, because it was like two different cultures around COVID in a
Two
lot of
different
ways.
cultures, yes.
So that was also like, how do we navigate this? This is like two different worlds in a lot of sense.
So the way I tell the joke now, years after, is I say, we didn't fully participate in some parts of the pandemic down here in South Florida. And then the other thing is that, we build our, it's so warm that so much of our life is outside. We build our buildings kind of inside out. Our hallways are all outside. So like day-to-day stuff, we had a little bit more flexibility from places that have, so many more enclosed buildings. But also down south in Florida where I am, we're not great at following rules. So that was another
That's
hilarious
true.
thing. They were like, we've closed the park. And then you'd look in and everybody was in the park, and it was like, but it's, you're not supposed
Meanwhile,
to be in there,
Florida.
right? Exactly. Meanwhile, in
Seriously.
Florida, people are insisting that it's not happening. And so, yeah, that was the reality down here. But it was, and we make light of it because that's the way to go through it. But it was a very, very tough situation. I feel like a lot of people I know changed their job either directly due to the pandemic. A lot of people like lost their jobs or displaced, or they made changes. I know a lot of people who retooled during the pandemic, went back to school. So that was my impression. I did a little research getting ready for this conversation. According to research by Indeed, 64% of the people who changed jobs, right? So 64% of the people who changed jobs between 2022 and 2024 also changed careers. So they did a complete industry shift. I don't know if that's more or less than normal, I gotta say, like, but it came up in the research. It seems like a lot to me. I don't know. So before the pandemic, let's talk about this. Were you happy as an ICU nurse before the emergency and the global pandemic?
I think this was a saving grace for me. I was barely working as an ICU nurse. I was working in my wellness company, my holistic wellness company, seeing people in person for fitness, for personal training, and health coaching. So I would work like a day a week at the hospital. And then the pandemic hit, and I realized okay, this is going to last longer than we're anticipating. There's a lot of help that's needed. I have this skill set. Let me go to work. This is what I know and go back. But I think because I had that reserve, I think it helped me be able to be fresh in the beginning. And like I mentioned, I didn't really realize how chaotic it was at first. I think part of that was because I was just happy to be able to help and I was, had that reserve. I hadn't been working, but the reason I had cut back is because I knew that I didn't want to do bedside forever and I wanted to be in on preventative wellness and more of a holistic approach.
Okay. All right. So that is really interesting. So you had trained for a nurse. How long did you work as in nursing before you started your spinoff, your holistic spinoff, your side hustle?
Probably about 4 years, and then I had my own spiritual revival, physical transformation experience. And shortly after that, working in ICU, having, I remember my specific patient that was the turning point for me to start my business. She was 60s. She was a code blue, came down to ICU, was working nights at the time, heart disease, diabetic type 2. And I remember just thinking, wow, if, I could have worked with her earlier and she was able to make positive, these health changes. Maybe she wouldn't have ended up being here. And I realized I really had a really deep calling to help people avoid hospitalization was like the initial piece. And then also for those people that do want to shift the direction of their life to one that's more healthy, more aligned, feels more true to their soul. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to help those people because that was me. I wanted to change. I just had no idea how to get off my hamster wheel. I didn't have the
Okay.
tools.
Yeah, so it is, I mean, it is the thing. Our medical system in the United States, I can't speak to anything outside because I don't have the experience, really is designed to kick in with emergency care when you're sick. And that's not totally true. Like this is a complex, nuanced situation, but most of the time we go for medical intervention when we don't feel good, when we break a bone, when something is wrong. And that's sort of opposite from the concept of, if you have counsel, advice, training, making good decisions to, I guess what do we call it? Longevity and wellness now is the other thing. And it's a weird situation because the experts that we turn to, we don't talk to them until we're in
We're
that
sick a
crisis,
lot of
until we're
times.
sick, right? And then, we need to be unsick. It's like, make me feel better. But I definitely, my dad had heart disease years and years ago, and we went through this. And I remember just asking the team, like, why is this level of intervention only here once it's gone too far and your choices are so slim, and that's the way it's designed. That's the way it's done. So you were in the business. How old were you, if you remember, when you decided you thought you wanted to go into nursing?
I was around 18. I wanted to be a psychologist, and my
Okay.
mom had been, she went back to school later in life and became a nurse. And she told me, well, be a nurse. You'll always have a job. I'll help you pay for school. So I went that route, and I'm glad I did. It was a good choice. And now with my business, I'm able to really focus on mental and emotional well-being too with the people I work with. So it's been cool to kind of see how it has come around full circle in some ways. I'm not a psychologist, obviously, but how my focus is really heavily in mental well-being and emotional regulation. So
Yeah.
about 18 is when I was like, all right, I could be a nurse.
And it was a practical decision. It was that decision of have a skill that you can always get a job. That's career advice that is tried and true. There's a lot of people, most people have that in their family where
My
somebody
best friend
says,
and I both went and we were on the brink of going to the army. They promised
okay.
us we'd stay together. And her mom was like, they are not going to keep you girls together. Go to nursing school. Her mom is also a nurse. So we went to nursing school together.
So I love this story even more now. So you were in high school, you were trying to figure out what to do with your life. Yeah, you had a dream that you were like, I'd like to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Your mom is like, you should do something practical, become a nurse. And
Always had a thought.
the other option that you guys were considering was going into the army.
Because you can travel the world,
100%.
pay for school, and we would get a six-pack abs from boot camp. That's where the
Oh.
18-year-old mind was.
Oh my gosh.
Thank
I
God for our
saw
moms, for us personally. It was
that
a good
is so
choice to go
interesting.
to nursing school.
I saw a data point that even today in 2025, a huge number of the people who enlist voluntary enlistment in the armed forces, their top reason is for college expenses. And the data that was posted, that was through the lens of maybe we should make college, like slightly less expensive. But it's still true. That's a big motivator. And it's a great perk. It is a solid sales pitch when they show up at the high school and they're like, we're going to pay for school and you can travel the world. It is a solid sales pitch,
Stay with your
very
best
effective.
friend. I mean, we were sold on it, but our
Yeah, I don't know if
boss
I would have believed
had a little
them.
more
I don't
direction
know if I would
for
have
us.
believed them on that one because, like, in all the
I don't
shows,
think
everybody gets
so.
so gets separated. But and my friends who've done it and they talk about seeing the world, they're like, yeah, you see, the bases around the world, maybe, or the inside of the submarine, as it goes around the world. It's not like, leisure travel.
Right.
So, but it's a good sales pitch. All right, so you had this original vibe that you were very interested in the brain part and the psychology, and then you go into nursing. At the time of this, you had already started working as a holistic coach. Tell us more. You've talked about this a little bit, but tell us more about what was the drive for you to move into holistic coaching instead of nursing.
Okay, so in my family, we struggle with mental illness. So I think from the beginning, I was intrigued about the mind, mental illness. My dad died when I was young. So that really, I was 9 when he died. And so that changed my path, I believe, in so many ways. Like I would think, okay, this is how my life would have been if my dad would have stayed alive. This is how it ended up being. And like a lot of trauma after that point for quite a while. And so for me, getting into like holistic and mental well-being was such a deep healing journey for me in so many ways. I did so much releasing of shame. I used to be somebody who struggled with chronic indigestion, GI symptoms since I was like 13 years old. I'd be popping tons of Tums, Prilosec, Xantac. You're not supposed to take all these things together at all. And when I started on my healing journey and started really addressing things that I didn't even know were to be addressed, really, it all went away. Like all of that, those GI symptoms went away. And so it really, I thank God for being able to like discover coaching because it did. It changed my life in so many ways. I think had I not had this opportunity, who knows where I would be right now. And I see what a positive effect it's not only had on me, but like on my family, on my, people I work with.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful now that, nursing is a wonderful career. I'm so grateful that I did go to nursing. And I think that being a nurse has allowed me to have more flexibility with my business as well.
Yeah. So how did you discover? Because holistic wellness is not normally a part, I think, of modern nurse training. I could be wrong about that, but how did you discover holistic wellness coaching?
I had a friend who had gotten introduced to the coaching world, and he started calling me up. I was working night shifts and asking me, what did I want with my life? I was like, I was 27 at the time, and I was a party girl, and it was a lot of fun, but I also knew this is not going to be a cute look after a certain point. Like, I had this image, and I would joke, I'm going to be like 80 in the club with my martini glass, like spilling it all over the place, like fist pumping. And although there was humor in that, there was also some sadness in that. And I was getting to the point that I knew, okay, there's got to be more to life than just work and party. And then he introduced me to this coaching program. And through that, I really started realizing they touch on holistic a little bit in the nursing school,
Okay.
but it's overall pretty dismissed. The focus is primarily on physical symptoms, and the emotional and mental pieces pretty much disregarded. There's very, and spiritual too. And then I started realizing through my own journey, oh, wait, this is a whole package. This doesn't, nothing, no parts of us are in isolation. And that's where I really realized, like, oh, this is all so interconnected. Wow. And this all works together. And that little piece they talk to us about psychosomatic symptoms and how it's really kind of portrayed as a mental illness in our, training. That there's something wrong. No, this is just actually human being. That when we have things going on emotionally, mentally, spiritually, it can also affect our physical health and vice versa. And through my own personal experience, it made it so evident that for healing, We need to really focus on all these areas.
Yeah. So that is really interesting. Okay, so I'm going to ha ask you to share a little bit more about what you mean with the word holistic. And the reason I ask this is not to put you on the spot or question you, but to bring everybody who's listening and watching onto the same page. So when you say holistic wellness, holistic coach, what does that word holistic mean, in your opinion?
In my world, holistic, because it can, I think other people are going to describe it a different way. I look at it through the lens of biopsychosocial spiritual, so through the lens of our physical health, our physical well-being, the physical things in our life, mental and emotional well-being, social being, relationships, work, hobbies, all the things we do. And then
The
our
wheel of
spiritual
life.
life, exactly. And then if you think of a chair, if one leg of our life is totally, challenged, little stub on the chair, we're going to fall out of the chair, right? Or if you have a flat tire, your car's not going to go a whole lot very far. And so, how it all is interconnected and really works together. And I'll give you the example of like my extreme burnout during the pandemic. I thought that, okay, I'm taking care of myself. And I was in some ways, right? I was exercising, I was working my ass off. I was eating relatively healthy. I was doing some meditation, mindfulness, that kind of thing. But when I got really, really sick and ended up in a gastroenterologist office, it was a from my training, it was a big enough of a red flag for me to say, okay, I think I'm doing okay, but my body's giving me another story here. So I need to look through that holistic lens of like, what is really going on here? And that's where I realized, oh, I've been living in survival mode and, disregarding the trauma that I've had in some ways, or not ready to process up until that point, I guess. I think we're not always ready to address certain things in our life. And
Sure.
sometimes it comes up through big symptoms. And so, through that holistic lens, I was able to say, okay, this GI bleed's not just a physical thing. There's also something else here. And that's where I really discovered unprocessed trauma that I was actually burned out. And in my mind, would have told you mentally, I should be doing more because I was overriding all these red flags because it had been my normal for so long to push through. So I think the holistic lens is such a powerful one for us to look through, especially with symptoms, because they
Yeah.
can give us such deep gateways to healing.
So this plays out. Let's see if I understand the time frame of how this is. So you were an ICU nurse. You leaned into that because you are a person who was motivated to give. You had these skills that were in need. So you lean into that. You're doing a lot of ICU nurse work during this global pandemic. You're probably aware that you're under stress. But it's like anything else when there's so much to do and few people that can do it, it's easy to just keep going instead of look at how much stress you're under. You end up with a GI bleed. So that sounds dramatic to me. I'm not sure if I'm right about that. What does it mean that you ended up in the gastroenterologist office with a GI bleed? Like, what was actually happening in your body?
Like I had stools that were like GI, like blood coming out of my body. And so for anybody listening, that's a symptom. Yeah. And that you need to pay attention to, right? Like that's something that not to just disregard and just
No,
say
I
like,
think
oh,
that, yeah.
okay, that's normal or that's not right, but let me keep going. No, that needs attention.
And I mean, I think that it would definitely get your attention if you're paying attention to it. But I think the other side of that, when we're busy, when stuff is hard, is that the decision that sometimes is right in front of us is, I can't pay attention to this right now. So I don't feel like what we're doing in the moment is saying, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to shortchange my health on purpose.
Of
It's just that the
course.
stuff that's right in front of us, it can sometimes be very challenging to actually see all the components
I didn't
neutrally.
know. I was pretty blindsided. Like, I thought in some ways I was taking care of myself, but in some ways I really wasn't. And I had really no idea, which was humbling and devastating, but also a really beautiful gift on the other side of it.
So when does this begin to happen? Are you sitting in the GI's office, the gastroenterologist office, and you think to yourself, "Wow, I need to pay attention to what's going on?" Or was there a moment where you were like, "I need to look at this more carefully?" Was there a moment of change? Was it a slow sort of decision? How did this
It
shift
was the
happen?
few weeks after the fact that I started questioning what, how did I end up here? And curiosity is so important. I always encourage people, be your own detective, be curious, ask powerful questions, like be your own advocate. And I started asking, like, okay, how did this happen? What is the root cause of this? And I realized, oh, okay, I went down the rabbit hole and I'm like, oh, I've been in sympathetic dominance. I've been in like fight, flight, or freeze nonstop. And it's just my baseline. That's all I know. So, of course, I didn't recognize it because I've been living this way my entire life. Like, I've always been a hard worker, a workaholic. And I thought that that was just who I was. But when I started going a little deeper, I realized, oh, I work so much and I'm so obsessed with working so much. Because there's pain under the surface here. Like there were things that I didn't even know I was running from. I realized I was running a lot in life, and that now my body had, developed gastrointestinal symptoms as a result of that. And so then I started putting the puzzle pieces together, and it actually led me to an ayahuasca journey where I realized, oh, I had always heard people say, oh, I didn't realize I hadn't processed the grief. And at that time, it was like 25 years since my dad had passed away. So, I was pretty cocky that no, that wasn't my situation. I processed that grief, until that experience. And I realized, oh, no, I couldn't process the grief. And I couldn't process a lot of the things at the time because they were just too devastating for
Yeah,
me
you're a
as a
baby.
child and a teenager. And so it really opened up my healing on a much deeper level that I didn't even know was possible.
All right, so we're going to come back to the ayahuasca journey. That's a good story, I'm sure. So for you had done some training to be aware of holistic coaching. You were working with clients on holistic things. But for you, is this the straw, the GI bleed and the stress from work and the awareness of the overwhelm? Is this like a straw that breaks the camel's back and causes you to make a big shift in your life? Is it what knocks down the house of cards and you become aware? How does this feel when you're actually having? Is it like a slow trickle of awareness that you're discovering, or is it a big, once a moment it's like, oh, something else is up? Because it could have been, right? It could have just been a physical thing. Like you could have eaten something or had an
Correct. Yes,
inflammation.
correct. It didn't have to be this big, spiritual thing. It could have been like, oh yeah, you're, could be something, much more just in the physical health. For me, I think, it was a trickle in some ways, but also very profound in that it just opened me up to such a deeper level of healing and changed so many things over the course, I would say, over like a couple years, and made me realize how important nervous system regulation is. And no wonder it's so hard for so many people to create healthy habits because so many of the people I worked with were dysregulated. And when you're in survival mode, you're not trying, like, you're trying to get through your days. You don't necessarily have the capacity at that time to create all these healthy habits. So for me, it made it so much more evident of how important nervous system regulation is, and also self-compassion is such a so. I mean, I knew that before, but it like took it to a whole next level.
So my favorite description of this is I say it's very hard to read the label from inside the bottle, but one of the things that when we talk about, nervous system regulation and these things is the very real experience that this is very much like negotiating with a toddler and trying to tell the toddler that they're tired, and the toddler's like, no, I'm not. In the moment before you realize that you are, and you don't realize you're dysregulated in most situations, you're like, I'm fine.
Of course, yeah.
And this is not like an uncommon thing. This is a thing that every story that I've ever heard about people are like, no, I thought I was fine. And then,
Then we're like, oh no, we're
somebody
not.
showed me, what fine actually looked like. And you're like, oh no, that's not. That's not how I am. No, that's fine. I didn't know that was possible. So that for people who are thinking, well, how did you know? It's like you don't know. How did you become aware that you were dysregulated? Do you remember that sense of awareness that you were like, oh, this is
Think it was
not.
Dr. Libby Weaver's work, Rushing Woman Syndrome, and
Okay.
hearing that. And that's where I realized, oh, I'm a rushing woman. Oh, I'm
Okay.
always on to the next thing. And then that led me down the rabbit hole of,
So you were
this
doing,
is what I have going on here.
was that personal exploration or was that like sort of work training, like you were listening to
Personal,
it? And
for me, it's a big overlap.
yeah.
It really is. And so I think a combination, but it
And
was
so
such a
you just
light bulb.
heard, yeah. And so you heard the description, you were like, oh, wait a second, that's what I'm doing.
And then I realized, oh, my ladies, that's what they're doing too.
Yeah.
No wonder things have been a little, hard despite these like mental things that we know. And like to go back to what you said, right? When stress is high, when emotion is high, intelligence is low, and we don't even necessarily realize that's what's happening.
And there's such a big gap between being aware intellectually or academically that something can happen and the experience of it happening. So, so many people know, right, that when you're under high stress, like in a car accident or something, that, your vision is going to tunnel and the symptoms of that. And yet, that doesn't mean that when it happens to you, it's not totally shocking how crazy your focus changes. So I think that that's definitely an element. How do you get from rushing wind, woman syndrome, which is I didn't was unaware of that. So that's a thing I learned today, is how do you get from that to ayahuasca?
So that was like fast forward, let's say 8 months. And I was just going deeper into my healing journey. I was getting these like audible messages of slow down. And I remember like, I thought I had already slowed down. And so I kept
Yeah.
realizing that my baseline of living was so chaotic in a lot of ways. And I had talked to my husband and I had talked about doing ayahuasca for like 8 years. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty wild. I don't think so. And then it came to a point, this was a total divine intervention. I went for a haircut up in New York. The hairstyle, random hairstylist, she's telling me, oh, you got to meet my friend. She's known as Spiritual Nurse on Instagram. I'm going to connect you too. So she connects us. I talked to this girl for 5 minutes and I'm like, I want to ask her to come on my retreat and teach. And I'm like, that's kind of like love bombing and weird. Like, I don't even know her. Let me slow down. So we have our conversation. And at the end of the conversation, I'm like, this is going to sound so weird, but do you have any interest in coming in Costa Rica with us in like a month or so? And would you be interested in teaching? And she's like, oh, let me think about it. She gets back to me. She ends up coming. And she had been on these ayahuasca journeys for a while. So she starts telling us about them. I know in Costa Rica, she says, Brittany, you're never going to believe this. But that day you invited me, I had a session with my psychic the day before, and she kept saying, are you planning to go to Costa Rica? And she's, no, I'm not planning to go to Costa Rica. And then midway session, your guides keep asking me, are you going to Costa Rica? And she's like, I'm not
Yeah.
going to Costa Rica. And then she's like, even at the end, she's like, are you sure you're not going to Costa Rica? And then the next day you asked me, so I knew I was meant to go with you. So she connected us to the experience. And I think for my husband and I both, at that point, we realized, oh, working in ICU during COVID was traumatic. And, we both, well, I think, as many people do, we've had a reasonable amount of trauma in our life. And it just really was like, okay, this is like one of the next steps for us on our healing journey. So
Yeah,
we
I would
moved
say,
forward
I
with
mean,
that.
as an outsider, trauma is one of those things that really has gotten a lot of very modern attention. And so people talk about it a lot in just conversation. But I would say that, yeah, as an outsider, just absolutely. I mean, I think that working in healthcare, ICU healthcare, for even just a small period of time during lockdown would qualify as acute trauma. Like you're overwhelmed. You didn't have the tools to navigate what was going on. The support networks were all tapped out. All of that stuff. It just seems like that totally matches the qualification. What is surprising, though, is that even though that I think there was a lot of publicity of how hard it was and how traumatic it was, I think it is a common thread that the people who were involved in the day-to-day still, even though they were surrounded by people talking about the trauma and things, a lot of people ended up really with residual self-care that they had to do to dig themselves out.
I still work with like several of my clients still today are picking up the pieces, my healthcare clients, their experience from it. And everybody, right? I don't want to say every single person, but generally most of us and who lived to tell through COVID have some kind of residual. It's hard on all of us in different ways.
Everybody's got a pandemic story. Many people have really tough pandemic stories. It was a really crazy time. So you're going through this journey. This is not a quick fix that you go through. So you do the ayahuasca, you realize, or you come more face to face with the fact that you are not recovered from the trauma of working through the pandemic. You also do what I would call origin work, origin story work, which ties back to the grief of losing your father as a child, which, that was a story you knew and, you'd been living with for a couple of decades and you thought was resolved. And you go through it and you realize that. What choices are you making at this time that are moving you through this? You're dealing with burnout recovery, peeling back these layers of grief and healing. What are the choices you're making at that time that are moving you forward in this process?
For me, it was slowing down because I was want to do all the things all the time and go, go, go kind of person. So slowing down, and even though I still was doing self-reflection, even when all this happened, it was like a deeper level of self-reflection, of meditation, of being in nature. And then a few months after the ayahuasca journey, I quit drinking alcohol. And I think for me, that also opened up a lot of goodness in my life. It like lifted a veil and was a really powerful piece of the puzzle. I had more energy. I felt more aligned. It felt more authentic. It was time. I've been at that point drinking since I was probably like 13 years old. And so that combination of quitting alcohol and then slowing down and getting deeper into tune to what was like my authentic yes and what really felt resonant for me. And then fast forward a little bit more, and I left the hospital completely.
Okay, because I was going to ask you if you went
It was
back to the
time for me.
hospital.
Like this upcoming April will be 4 years. I took a trip to India. My husband and I went to India with a friend, and seeing people in India be super happy, super family oriented, living very simply. When I got back, it was really clear to see priorities and what mattered most to me, and like my values were just like so solid. I'm like, what? The hospital will be there if I need to go back. And so I was like, I'm not going back. I'm not going back. I haven't gone back. So that's been a good fit for me personally. Because the work I'm doing is, I'm doing deeper work with my clients than I ever have. I'm passionate as can be, and I'm so glad that I took that leap. But it was a process. It was, years of process before I got to that point.
That is very interesting. All right, so you stay you, so how long have you not worked in the hospital? How long? Because you went back.
3.5 years.
So 3.5 years, but you did go back. So after the ayahuasca, you are still
I
working in the
went
hospital.
back. And then when I got back to Florida, the healthcare in Florida, personally, my experience has been that it's really poor. And it was just, I was going to work thinking, I don't want to do this. This is, I just had so much resistance. And I was ready to make that decision. It was the best decision for
All
me.
right. So, and that's when, and you, so the, at that point, the pandemic is over. And so that decision of you to, so I have two questions. Was the alcohol decision more driven by like a personality, like a lifestyle change, like I'm growing up, this is my healthy decision? Or was it, can it can be yes and it can be both? Or was it consuming alcohol is getting in the way of me like really tuning into the messages from my body and my spirit?
It was both. I did a 100-day fitness challenge where I took a break from alcohol January 1. And then when I started asking myself, do I go back and just drink on the weekend? So those special occasions, because I've taken pauses with alcohol over the past, like at that point, 5 years, but then it would just find its way back into my life. And so then I asked myself, well, what if I just quit? And it was so calm and so clear, and I knew that that was the decision. And after, a month of not drinking, it was easy not to drink again. And so I just stopped, and it was such a good decision for me. It quieted my back and forth about should I drink, should I not drink? And it felt so much more authentic because here, you know, I was telling, guiding people and living healthy, and not that you can't drink and be healthy, but it was the best decision for me. And in the past, I struggled with alcohol and have
Okay.
had a complicated relationship with it. Addiction runs in my family, so it was also, it's time. I've had enough drinks in my life.
There,
I'll be okay
you had checked all the
if
boxes. You were like, I've taken
I
the online quiz. I have a
Yeah.
high enough score. It's time to stop this.
Yeah,
All right.
it's good.
And then
It's
with the job, were you holding on to the job for like financial security
good. Yeah,
and
it was my
stability
security
while you were?
blanket. It was my security blanket and identity. I'm an
Yes.
ICU nurse. I'm a hospital nurse. I have the skill set. Like, who
Yeah.
am I if I'm not? I mean, I've been going, working in the hospital since 20 years old. And then fast forward, here I am, what, 37. Who am I without the hospital? Who am I
Yes.
with, you know? And we're always recreating ourselves and capable of letting things go and stepping into new identities and situations. But it took me a while. And that's, I think,
It
totally
is,
fine.
but I will say that that's one of the through lines of this show, that we do, a lot of us do experience surprise at the reinvention after 22 or 24, right? So like, you know, when you're 18, you're making choices, and even though we know other people who make decisions and pivots, a lot of people do really struggle with that because it's like we do carry this limiting belief that it's like, no, that decision I make when I'm 18 and a half is supposed to be the last one. It's just supposed to go on perfectly from there. Happiness, you know, is automatic. And so then when we do make a shift, like, you know what, I'm gonna walk away from this job that is so well regarded in the public eye. I'm respected. It's a part of my identity. It's a tough identity shift. It's
And
it
there's
can be.
also guilt, like, what's wrong with me that I don't want to do this anymore? And I'm working alongside of some of these nurses who've been here 30 years and still love it. And do I
Yeah.
just need to change my attitude? Do I need to just, you know, suck it up? Like, there was guilt to it as well. So that was complicated. That took me a while to get over.
Yeah, no, that's a big one. That's a big one. All right, so you've done a lot of work. Ayahuasca, you went to India and said hello to the cows, and all of the things that you're doing that. All right, so I'm going to ask you a question. But I want to be really clear that the reason I asked this question is not at all about judgment of anything that happened or that you did or any of those things. The reason I ask these questions about past type things is for reflection and comparison by people who might be going through something similar at the time, right? So, like for somebody else. So, more for this one specifically, for adults who might have kids in their life who are dealing with grief. Right. So I'm going to ask you about your childhood grief. Right. When you think back to the 9-year-old you, who had the stress and grief of losing a parent, do you think that this is the path that she maybe needed to follow? She wasn't ready to deal with it. She didn't have the school tools. She needed to go through this. Or can you think of things that you wish had happened to the younger version of yourself that would have helped you?
Part of me is like, this is the perfect unfolding, and I didn't have the tools or the capacity to go to the depth of the level of pain that that grief was for me because I was so close with my dad. I wasn't in a secure, safe, loving relationship that I have with my husband to be able to really go to the depths of just how painful that truly was to me at 9 years old. And I also can see the instability that, you know, was in my life at that time. My poor mom was 30 years old,
Yeah.
left with three little kids, and she was somebody who had so much trauma in her childhood and in her life up to that point. So she was grieving and just trying to, you know, do what she could, and
Yep.
she did an incredible job, and she didn't have the resources. So I think, you know, if she did have the resources, it's she got us into therapy and, you know, definitely did so many beautiful things. So it's really hard to say. I think therapy maybe longer, but then when you're refusing to go, which I did at a certain point, you know,
Right.
It's really hard to say. And for me personally, although I had a lot of poor, crazy, wild decision making as a teenager, I was also a good student and really polite. So for teachers and, my coaches and that kind of thing, there was probably they probably knew I was doing wild things. I mean, I think adults are pretty clear on which kids are being, out of control a lot of times and which ones are staying home at night. But what could they do? So
Right. Well, and that comes back to we were talking about that before, that the medical system is really only designed to intervene once something goes wrong. So if you were highly functioning, you were getting the grades, you were showing up, what, even if you suspect, if people said, hey, we think she might be doing some stuff that is risky or whatever, there's no place to jump in, but I'm going to school, I'm passing my tests. Like, who are you to tell me I need to do something else? And I think that's fair. And when I was thinking of that question, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a good question because it's a, I don't want to put too much pressure on adults or children. I think that, grief is an incredibly private, personal experience. And one of the things that's so challenging about these things is, and you were 9, that was your normal right away. You had no, you had no other concept of what it's supposed to be like if you don't go through that. And so, it's like you don't, it's a really, really tough spot. So, yeah.
I think the way it unfolded obviously is so beautiful. That's the way it unfolded, and I'm grateful for the way it unfolded. And something that if parents are listening, is it your first time at life too? And
Right.
like the responsibility of a parent is so massive, and you're trying to take care of yourself, and you have these little people you're trying to take care of, and each one is different, and it's your first time going through all these experiences as well. So it was, we really are all trying to do our best, and hindsight is, brilliant, and the oh, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but we have to be careful of that too and take what
100%.
now, but we can't undo what we didn't know
You
would have
can't,
been.
it's not possible to know what you don't know. Sometimes we get advice that isn't helpful. We ask in the wrong spots, all of these things. And yeah, that's one of the themes that I talk about all the time is that you can be trying to do the very best you can and not be, not get the right information, not get the helpful information. And then all of a sudden, sometimes it'll pop up. In your case, it was ayahuasca. But sometimes it's like all of a sudden somebody will say, oh, this is how you do it. And you're like, oh my God, why didn't anybody tell me that? Like 6 months ago. And my story, so when my dad died, I really put a lot of pressure on myself for telling all the young kids in my family correctly. So I like called all the professionals I knew. I studied it like it was like a class in school. Like I had pages of notes. And I also had this false narrative I was telling myself at the time that I didn't realize for years. I was telling myself that no one in my life had gone through this experience, which is so false on its face. All these people, like my in-laws and all these older people, they had lost their parents. They had told. So anyway, that took years before I realized it. But I love this story. I tell it every once in a while. So I'm going through this whole thing. I've got pages of notes. I'm pressuring myself on how to tell the kids. My kids were, my stepkids were in like middle school and maybe high school, and then the other kids were little. The exterminator came to the house, regular thing, right? Very exciting for 2-year-olds and 5-year-olds. And the kids open the door and they blurt out to this guy, his name was Pepe. He was older than I was. He was in the late 60s, early 70s. And they blurt out and they're like, did you know, Pepe, did you hear my grandpa died? And he just like looked right down at them and he put his hand on one of the kids' like shoulder or head. And he just said, I heard that. That's sad. And they shrugged or said, okay, and ran off and played. And I watched it unfold and I realized that the 5 pages of notes that I had from the various specialists I consulted that were like, keep it simple, ask the questions, don't be surprised when it comes back up, just acknowledge where they are and then see if they ask. It was like, that was what he had done. And like, I had been like
Big
overcome.
preparation.
I had been overcomplicating this, like, let me explain in detail all of these things. And what I really, did I think that I would get a lesson on how to do this from the exterminator in my house? No, I did not. But, that is where it showed up. And I was like, That's it. That's all I needed to do is just meet them where they were and let them move through it. And I think that that's the crazy thing that we go through. It's like we don't know where the answers will show up. We don't know what we don't know, and we just have to be open to the fact that that's the way it goes.
I love when those angels show up at the perfect time. It's like, oh, that's exactly what I needed at that exact time.
I
Thank
know,
you. You didn't even know you needed
Didn't even
that.
would never have known. Yeah, exactly. All right, so in a second we're going to do the final questions. We've talked a lot about the ICU nurse, the training of the holistic coach. I want to give you a chance to tell the people who are watching and listening exactly what you do, who you help, and how they can find you online after they listen to this interview.
Yeah, so I work with women who are in transition or burned out or at a point where they know they've been neglecting themselves. They've been taking care of their families, their spouse, their career, but really neglected themselves. And at this point where it's their time and they know it's their time. So I work with them one-on-one through a holistic approach, the one that we talked about. And we really outline what it is that they want to work on together. A lot of times it's really healing that relationship they have with themselves. They tend to be really critical of themselves, judge themselves, holding on to a lot from the past. And so it's really this beautiful, like, coming home journey. And we work together, we create a plan, and we work together through somatic practices. So, through body mind practices and deep healing, nutrition, fitness, the whole lifestyle approach. So, that's a big piece of my business and how I work with clients. I also host retreats. So, it's like that on steroids in a group. Setting, which is so healing. That was a big part of my journey. I didn't want anybody to know any that I had any stuff. And then when I realized everybody has stuff, as crazy as that sounds, it leveled the playing field and was like instrumental in my healing. So the healing that goes on the retreats, I joke, is like, yeah, what we share is important, but really the magic happens in community and the relationships. So we have a couple retreats next year, one in May and one in November. One is a reset and recharge retreat. So really focusing on that nervous system regulation, nourishment through that holistic approach. And the other one's adventure wellness. So we'll be doing more outdoor hiking, all that good stuff.
Are they always in Costa Rica?
The ones next year are going to be near Tulum in Mexico in
That's
May
beautiful.
and then Argentina. We're going to be going to Patagonia in November. And I cannot wait to go to the glacial lake and be there. Yeah, I'm so excited for that. Super excited for that. And then another way I work with clients is through peptide protocols. So, are you familiar with peptides? You know about them? You're probably hearing it, starting to hear it more.
Through the lens of like the peptides for wrinkles and the creams and drink the
Okay.
peptides. Like I'm so, like I'm like midlife. So like the social media algorithm is like, you need peptides.
Yes,
Eat
peptides
peptides.
are
Put peptides under your
amazing.
skin.
So, most of these are actually injectable, self-injectable at home. There are a couple that are oral form, but what they are is they're short-chain amino acids that have specific healing functions. So they act as like messengers. And as we age or we've experienced disease in the body or sickness or illness, we need this extra, support to re-amplify these healing mechanisms. So some will help with weight loss, some help with brain fog, inflammation, libido, all those things. So I work with clients through that. They go through medical supervision and a pharmacy, and I'm there to like educate them and guide them
I
with
was gonna
that. But
say, that sounds pretty intense.
I
All
love
right,
it. And
so.
people feel so much better so quickly, which is I think it's such a great piece of the puzzle, right? It's a great foundational tool in combination with the lifestyle approach.
Very cool. That is a perfect blend of your skills because it's like, so like the holistic and the wellness that feels like it's more like, vibes and breathing. But you also have this very Western medical thing. So it's like, yeah, no, give yourself a shot. Like,
Yeah, here's the science.
here's
Here's
your
the
right.
medical piece. Like, yeah, how can we complement them together, right? Because they have their place.
Exactly. All right. So you have a special offer for the audience, which is Discover Elevated Wellbeing Consult. So this is a consultation, 45-minute consultation designed to help you gain clarity on what's draining your energy. And you can schedule that. People who are listening and watching can schedule that at Visit Holistic Nurture. Visit. Sorry, let's try it again. This is a good place. This link will be in the show notes. So the easiest way to get these links is always to be subscribed to the email community because then when I stutter over it or if there's a
You're
typo,
going to
it's in your
have it and you can
email.
just
Yes.
click on it.
You can just
Exactly.
click on it.
Sign up.
Holisticnursecoaches.com is where you find that. All right, that is very generous. Thank you so very, very much, Brittany, for that offer. Are you ready for the final three questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right,
And thank
very,
you.
very
Thank you
cool.
for having me and thank you everybody listening to us.
Oh, yeah. All right. Very good. Okay. So Do you have a set morning routine? And if you do, what does it look like?
Right now, my morning routine tends to be take care of the dog, give my husband a kiss, get that coffee going after I drink some water. And I've been in a journaling mode, and I'm doing this book called Heart's Desire. So I'll do a little reading, a little reflection there. But I really like to do some journaling, some deep breathing, a couple moments of meditation to like set the tone for my day. Then I go
Beautiful.
about my day.
Very good. All right. So, are you, when it comes to reading, when it comes to books, you mentioned a book there, a journaling book. Do you like to read books? Do you do an e-reader? Do you listen to audiobooks? What is the way that you like to consume
I
books?
like a physical book quite a bit, although I listen to podcasts and I'll listen to some books on audio, but I think some don't do it justice to listen to them on audio. And I would like to read more than I do. I tend to not finish my books. A lot of those unfinished books laying around.
Really? Oh, it takes, I am so stubborn about this. Like a book has to really be disconnected for me to like I feel like I'm giving up on like
You'll
a
go all the way
contract.
through.
I will push
Good for
through
you.
in not always. There are definitely books where I'm like, no, done, not reading any more of this. But most of the time, and sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, but I need to it's like a
I need to
weird,
give it up. Like, you're like, I
right?
gotta
It's like
finish. I
a
started
Exactly. I'm not saying this is a good thing. Like, this is not a
Yeah.
great part. So, all right, very last, third and final. When you take vacations, do you prefer to travel a long way to exciting and exotic locations, or do you like to stick closer to home? I guess I sort of know this from the retreats, but what is your answer?
I like going new places, new cultures, new experiences. But I also like local, but I'd say like getting away.
All right.
Thank
Very good. That's it. Brittany Cano, thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Amy, you're awesome. Thank you. This was a great conversation. I had a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.